Welcome to Grim Gossip. Before we start the show, I want to give a proper warning. The episode you are about to hear may include grim details about assault, rape, and murder. Listener discretion is advised. Today's case is about a girl named Yunko Furuta. She was born on January 18, 1971, in Misato, Saitama, Japan, where she lived with her parents and two brothers. It was made clear that Yunko was a very good student with a good girl reputation. She never partook in the partying or any other extracurricular activities that most teenagers were taking part in. She even had a part-time job that she worked after school, and she had a job lined up at an electronics store after she graduated. Despite her urge to not party, she was still a popular girl, and everyone seemed to like her, including a boy named Hiroshi Miyano. Hiroshi was known as the school bully and frequently bragged about his connections to the Yakuza. For those of you who are unaware, Yakuza is a large organized crime ring that commits everything from robbery to murder. They adhere to a very strict set of rules they created and are considered highly dangerous. At 18 years old, Hiroshi had a lengthy criminal past, which included petty crimes such as stealing, being wildly disruptive, and damaging property. As he got older, his actions progressed. He had no respect for others and was often hanging around parks, scouting for unassuming women to attack and or rape. He was in a relationship with a gang member's sister and would move in with her for a while, but his gang member lifestyle would have him leading various sexual attacks on women, which would lead to the end of their relationship. On the rebound, Hiroshi made a bold attempt to ask Yunko out, but she showed no interest in him whatsoever and told him no. Hiroshi was not used to people telling him no, especially considering his connection to a dangerous gang. This would be the catalyst to what would come next. A couple days later, on November 25th, 1988, when Yunko was on her way back home from work, Hiroshi got his friend, Shinji Minato, to attack Yunko by kicking her off her bike. This allowed Hiroshi to swoop in as her savior, chasing away this hoodlum and helping her up. He then asked her if she wanted an escort home, to which she said yes. Unfortunately for her, instead of leading her home, he brought her to an abandoned warehouse where he threatened to have the Yakuza kill her and her family if she screamed. He then went on to rape her in that abandoned warehouse. After he was done, he took her to a hotel where he would continue to rape her, all the while talking about his affiliation with the Yakuza and issuing threats against her and her family. Hiroshi called up his friends to brag about the horrible things he had just done to the girl he likes. Around 3 a.m., Hiroshi dragged Yunko to a park where Minato and two other boys named Joe and Yoshushi were waiting for them. There, they read out her home address to her and told her if she attempted to run, they would murder her family. Unfortunately, this is where they each would take turns raping her. Usually, after they were done attacking a woman, she'd be released. But after this savage attack, Joe suggested keeping her captive instead of releasing her. So she was taken to Minato's house, where he lived with his parents and brother. When they entered Minato's home with Yunko, she was introduced as his girlfriend and she didn't object. She just politely said hi, and she was led upstairs where she would be held for 44 days. That same night, her parents grew concerned about her and began combing through the city looking for her with no luck. They did so again the following day, still no luck at all. On November 27th, 2 days after she was first taken, they contacted the police. A search began, but it was quickly halted when Yunko was forced to call her parents to tell them that she had run away and that she was safe. She told them she'd be staying with friends. Unfortunately, this would call off the manhunt for her, as she was now labeled a runaway and should be held as their captive until further notice. The following night, November 28th, Yungo tried to escape when several men entered the room. But Bonanno grabbed her by the legs and smothered her with a pillow as she screamed. His parents woke up and went to see what the commotion was, but he assured them everything was all right and sent them away from his bedroom. As punishment, she was brutally raped by everyone in the room. One of the boys there didn't want to take part, but was forced to under the threat of Yakuza. For several weeks, Yunko was subjected to rapes multiple times a day, from the four boys who abducted her as well as any friends they brought over to take part. The worst times included 12 men in one day. She was forced into humiliation upon demand by masturbating in front of them, eating live cockroaches, drinking her own urine, and being urinated on. They would soon amp up their torture by hanging her from the ceiling by her arms and using her as a human punching bag. When they allowed her to rest, she was made to sleep on the balcony in little to no clothing in 40-degree weather. During this time, she was seen by other family members in the house when she was allowed to use the bathroom. At some point, she was no longer forced to pretend to be Minato's girlfriend, as it was clear what was happening. But out of fear of him, his parents and brother never called the police to inform them what was happening. Someone had seen the atrocious abuse taking place and did tell their own brother, who ended up calling the police. Two policemen showed up at Minato's home and questioned everyone, but they were told nothing was happening. Minato offered them permission to search the home, but they declined and went on their way. Meanwhile, Yunko, still upstairs, was suffering. Aside from live cockroaches, she was being fed little amounts of real food. Eventually, she was only given alcohol, milk, and water, while also making her huff on fumes of paint thinner. One day, they decided to hang her again from the ceiling, but instead of using her as a punching bag, they beat her with whatever they could find, including golf clubs, bamboo sticks, and iron rods. But this just wasn't enough. They would go on to poke her with red-hot needles and metal skewers everywhere, and I mean everywhere. They even used a cigarette lighter to burn her genitals and eyelids, as well as using pliers to twist her nipples, eventually tearing them off. One day in December, Yunko got lucky and was left alone in the room for a little while. While the boys were not there, she found a phone and dialed the police. By the time she got someone on the other line, the boys had returned and hung up the phone before she could say anything. When the police called the number back, Hiroshi told them it had been a mistake, and they took him at his word. As punishment, the boys doused her legs in lighter fluid and set her on fire. This would make her unable to walk, meaning she would now have to crawl up and down the stairs to use the bathroom. Even at this point, the boys were still relentless with her. Since she was covered in injuries, in various stages of healing, she was beginning to ooze pus in multiple places, which made her undesirable. She was now strictly their torture doll. Now that she was no longer available to sexually torment, they introduced a new way to torture her, which included dropping metal weight balls on her stomach, inserting foreign objects into her rectum, vagina, and mouth, including needles, glass bottles, lit matches, lit fireworks, knives, wood, and hot light bulbs, and pouring hot wax on her. This would cause her to lose all control of her bowels. This didn't seem to be an issue with them, since she could no longer hold anything down or in, not even water, which caused more beatings if she made a mess. It took her about an hour to crawl to the bathroom, but after about 30 days, she stopped using the bathroom altogether. Yunko was completely unrecognizable. Her face was swollen black and blue. Every surface of her body had some sort of burn, bruise, or open wound. Her nose had been broken so badly, She couldn't breathe except for through her mouth. Every orifice in her body was severely swollen and burned. She begged the boys to kill her and end it all, but they had no desire to do so. On January 4th, 1989, just 39 days after Yunko was initially taken, Hiroshi went to see her. He had just lost a lot of money playing a game of mahjong, and he wanted to take his anger out on Yunko, which he did. He beat her mercilessly, then told her, if she could beat them in a game of mahjong, they'd release her. Without giving her a choice, they began the game. Even though Yunko had suffered severe trauma and had been hit on the head multiple times, she still had her wits about her, and the boys lost against her. Hiroshi lost his mind and began beating Yunko again while the other boys joined in. One of them kicked her in the stomach with so much force that she fell back into a stereo, hit her head, and started convulsing. Thinking she was faking, they poured lighter fluid on her and lit her on fire again and continued to beat her. The beating caused so much pus to secrete from her wounds, which just angered the boys even more. So they taped bags on their hands and continued beating her without the mess. They then poured lighter fluid on her limbs and set her on fire again. Despite her severe beating, which lasted about 2 hours, she was still alive. She tried to put the flames out a bit before she went limp. At this time, the boys decided to leave and head to their local sauna house. Yunko, left alone in this room, succumbed to her injuries while they were gone. Minato's brother called him to let him know that Yunko had died. Afraid of getting caught, they hurried back to get rid of her body. They wrapped her body in blankets and snuck her out of the house. They then placed her in a 55-gallon drum and filled it with concrete. They drove around for a while and decided to drop the gallon off in an abandoned area well known as a dumping ground for a multitude of things in Kodo, Tokyo. A couple weeks later, on January 23, 1989, Hiroshi and Joe were brought into the police station on a charge of rape and murder as they had found women's underwear in their homes. Hiroshi thought Joe had confessed to their crimes on Yunko, so he too confessed to the crime. But the police were dumbfounded. They knew nothing of Yunko's murder. They had been brought in for a separate case involving the rape and murder of another woman and also the murder of her 7-year-old son. The police pressed for more information, and Hiroshi told them where they would find her body. They were only able to identify her by her fingertips. All 4 boys were named and charged. They eventually pled guilty to committing bodily injury that resulted in death rather than murder. As they were all underage at the time, they were not publicly named, but instead listed as boy A, B, C, and D in order to protect their identities. They were charged and sentenced rather lightly due to their age. Hiroshi got 17 years. Minato was sentenced to 4 to 6 years. Yasushi was sentenced to 3 to 4 years. And Joe was sentenced to 8 years in juvenile detention. A multitude of other boys were also sentenced for their involvement in their crimes against Yunko as well. Yunko's parents were infuriated with the sentences. They opened a civil suit and won. Hiroshi's parents were forced to pay Yunko's parents 50 million yen, which would have been the equivalent to $370,000. This forced Hiroshi's parents to sell their family home in order to make amends. This case hit headlines all over Japan. One journalist from the Shukan Bunshun was even bold enough to publish the names of the boys, stating, quote, "Given the severity of the crime, the accused do not deserve to have their right to anonymity upheld." Unquote. Hiroshi tried to appeal his sentence, complaining that he was too harshly punished. Instead of a reduced sentence, the judge gave him 3 more years, bringing his total time in prison to 20 years. This is the second longest sentence ever given in Japan at the time, outside of life imprisonment. Yasushi also tried to appeal his case, but was also given more years instead. His new sentence was now 5 to 7 years. Minato followed suit, but was faced with the same outcome. He would now be serving 5 to 9 years instead of the original 4 to 6. While they were all in prison, Joe's mother decided to deface Yunko's gravesite, blaming her for what had happened to her son and for ruining his life. After their prison sentences had been served, the boys were released and did not go on to lead better lives. Joe attempted to change his name by taking the surname of his adopted family, Kamisaku. However, it is said that he had bragged about his involvement in the kidnapping, rape, and torture of Yunko. In 2004, he was arrested for assaulting someone he thought his girlfriend may have been involved with. He was sentenced to 7 years and has since been released. Minato was arrested in 2018 for attempted murder. He had beaten a 32-year-old man with a metal rod and slit his throat with a knife. For Yunko's funeral, a friend of hers provided a eulogy that read, quote, "Yun Chen, welcome back. I have never imagined that we would see you again in this way. You must have been in so much pain, so much suffering. The happy we all made for the school festival looked really good on you. We will never forget you. I have heard that the principal has presented you with the graduation certificate, so we graduated together. All of us. Yun Chan, there is no more pain, no more suffering. Please rest in peace." Unquote. The business where Yunko was supposed to have begun working at soon, the job she was so excited about, had presented her parents with her intended uniform, which was placed in her casket. And now, the location near where Yunko's body was found has been developed into a park, Wakazu Park. And that is where the case ends. If you guys enjoyed today's episode, there's many more to come. Hit the subscribe button so that you get notifications when new episodes drop. If you have any suggestions, send them my way at grimgossippod@gmail.com and follow me on Instagram at grimgossippod. All websites used for the research is in the show notes if you guys want to take a deeper dive into this case. Thank you for listening. Until next time.